It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Great to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Time for a political breakfast. The menu is full, so let's get right to it. Brian Robinson is back with us, former Deputy Chief of Staff and Communications Director for Georgia Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director of the Obama 2012 campaign. Welcome back, guys. Good to have you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Good morning.
All right, let's start with the travel order and the Atlanta figure who suddenly found herself at center stage, former Atlanta U.S. Attorney Sally Yates. Theron, immediately after she said to the Justice Department employees, don't enforce the president's travel order, and then got fired, the speculation started. Does Sally Yates have a political future in Georgia if she wants it?
I think she does, and let me tell you why. She is the symbol of what you've seen from millions and millions of people across the country and hundreds of thousands here in Georgia. She's a symbol to show some resistance towards this president. What she did, Dennis, was so courageous, and it was the right ethical leadership position for her to have. She basically stood up to this president, who, by the way, put forth an illegal executive order that clearly violated the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965. First, with her being a woman. Second, being a Georgian. And thirdly, a person who has 20 years of experience as a prosecutor in the state should be considered as a Democratic nominee for governor or U.S. Senate.
But part of her reputation, her brand, if you will, has been that she is non-political, that she has made a point of saying, I will follow the law wherever it leads, regardless of party. I'm not going to get involved in party. Her husband, Comer Yates, has run for things in the past. But Sally Yates hasn't. So does she have to shift in order to move into the political arena if she wants to?
One of the things that I've been sadly reminded of every single day that I turn on my television is that America elected someone who was not a politician, and that person is Donald Trump. I think her strong stance on being not a politician but a person who enforces the law, who actually does not get into the politics, is a good thing, especially when we have a White House now that has got a lot of scandals and alleged scandals and a lot of investigations that are going on right now, I think that the American people would like to look for just someone like Sally Yates.
Sally Yates has shown right out of the gates that she lacks good judgment, and here's why. If you are going to go out there and get the ire of Donald Trump and have him tweet at you, you need to have a book for sale on Amazon first. We learned this lesson from John Lewis. John Lewis's book sold out on Amazon immediately after he was attacked by President Trump. Sally Yates didn't do it. It shows a lack of foresight and the kind of leadership that we're going to need to take this state forward.
But Brian, let's be fair. That's a book that Congressman Lewis wrote a long, long time ago. And he's wrote, two or three books since then. So I don't think that he resisted Donald Trump to increase his book sales.
But he was enriched by it. And kudos. If you're going to do it, at least make some money getting trampled upon. But look, here's in all seriousness.
Yeah, point here.
We often have these candidates that come onto the scene in a flash of light because circumstances brought them there and gave them some amount of fame or ignominy. And it depends on your political perspective, which one this is. Republicans are going to say she caused a stunt. This was a stunt to get attention. She should have resigned. If you can't agree with the President of the United States and you are acting Attorney General, your duty is to resign, not to have a media stunt,
but
which is what she did.
Didn't the man who would succeed her, Jeff Sessions, ask her that very question when she was being confirmed as a Deputy Attorney General and he was trying to get her to stand up against President Obama if she needed to?
And she could have said, I disagree with this. I don't think it's within the law, and I am resigning in protest. That would have been the appropriate way. You know, getting fired and all that, Republicans can argue effectively that was a bit of a stunt. What we don't know is Sally Yates, and I agree that she's got a very stellar record that would be a political asset, no doubt about it. She has prosecuted people from Eric Rudolph, the Centennial Park bomber, to many prominent Democrats in this state, which gives her some bona fides that she's not just a partisan hack. So what we don't know is how she would transition from the legal world into the political world, because they are two different things. We see a lot of people who succeed in the business world or in the athletic world who can't make the transition because it's a different skill set.
I think the one thing that's most disappointing that what my friend just said is he's basically blaming her for doing her job. He's basically saying that you should have told this president, who has been a bully in the past and he's a bully now, that, you know what, I'm just going to resign. Even though what you're doing, Mr. President, is wrong and illegal, but I'm going to just resign because I only have a few days left. What she did was courageous. It was the right ethical leadership thing to do for this country, and she should be applauded for it.
Some legal scholars, including Alan Dershowitz, have said, look, I think the president's order was terrible, and there are parts of it that he, Alan Dershowitz, felt were illegal. But in coming up with a single response to something that had a lot of moving parts to it, he felt anyway that she was kind of overreaching, just in the sense of she needed to point out, where do we have a problem here and where does the president have discretion?
And she could have done that, Dennis, if this president had actually let her know that he was going to sign this executive order and if he had fully cooperated with his Justice Department. Therein lies the problem.
And the political question and the future possibly in politics for Sally Yates, of course, depends on her. And she has been very quiet since this episode.
We stand with Sally. Run, Sally, run.
You know, I had somebody yesterday, I can't remember who it was. It must have maybe a journalist or a Democrat, and they're like, Sally must be serious. Darren Johnson has come out saying she should run.
Hey,
that's the stamp of approval.
Being on the show with you guys giving me so much credibility in the world, so thank you.
Another Georgian, though, at center stage in Washington this week, Tom Price, the Georgia congressman from the North Atlanta region, designated or nominated to be the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. There was a lot of parliamentary maneuvering. Finally, the Senate Finance Committee approved his nomination. It heads to the full Senate. The Democrats have to pick their battles, though, don't they, Theron, in terms of these nominees to the cabinet, in terms of where do we dig in and fight and possibly filibuster? Is Tom Price on that list?
I think that ultimately Tom Price will be confirmed as the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. However, I do think that Democrats have to be very careful about who they choose to protest against and the backlash that will come from that.
Well, they may have some Republican support when it comes to the Education Secretary nominee,
right,
Ms. DeVos.
Right. And Chairman Price, listen, he's gotten his fair share of criticism. I mean, there's been a lot of critical things thrown his way. But ultimately, I think that his record in Congress, particularly his knowledge of the healthcare system and what he brings to the table, I think Democrats will, again, push back and show some resistance. But we've got to make sure that we spread it around and it's strategic.
Conversely, Brian, should he be confirmed, he will have to then take on the job of repealing and replacing Obamacare. Not the repeal part, but the replace part. And as time goes on, more and more people are saying, hey, we like this piece of it. We like that piece of it. That makes his job tougher, doesn't it?
I think he's going to have the toughest job in Washington, but I think he's the most prepared man in Washington to do that tough job. You know, Donald Trump has laid out in broad terms what he would like to see in the replace. It's going to be very tough to achieve without some of the unpopular parts, such as the individual mandate and some of the taxes that are embedded into
the ACA. But that pays for the parts that a lot of people like.
Absolutely. And that's going to be the challenge. And there's no one better prepared to do it than Tom Price. One thing I really admired about Tom Price in his confirmation hearings is he refused to make pie-in-the-sky promises to the Democrats that we're going to cover everybody and it's going to lower prices and you can keep your doctor, all these crazy things that President Obama said that weren't true. And he was much more realistic about what we're going to face going forward. We're going to have a good health care plan that's going to be more affordable and more sustainable than what we've had over the last 6 years. So he's the right man for the job. And the Democrats, you know, I've heard Chuck Schumer say, Senate Minority Leader, that, look, Let them replace. Now they own health care. Well, by that argument, confirm Tom Price with a unanimous vote and let him get to work and prove to America that he can do the job.
Moving on to City Hall for the moment, Mayor Kasim Reed this week gave his State of the City address, and he did it just as his administration was agreeing to release a million, count them, pages of documents related to this unfolding bribery scandal. Theron, E.R. Mitchell, a business owner, admitted to federal charges of conspiracy, saying he had spent $1 million in bribes to win contracts over a string of several years. So where does this leave City Hall at this point in the latter years, the latter days, really, of a Reid administration?
yesterday, Mayor Reed talked about all the great work that he's been able to do to lead this city with his partners at the city council. It was a speech that was full of economic development, jobs. He announced that he's going to now have a match from the United Way, $25 million to deal with homelessness in this city. Now, this bribery case is a very serious issue, and it's something that I think that not only the mayor but everyone at City Hall is taking very seriously. I was very happy to know that Mayor Reed is not only just going to release these 1.2 million documents, but he's also going to release over 500,000 text messages and phone records. And more importantly, he's going to do it very, very soon, as soon as next week, I'm hearing. And
yeah, a week from today, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that what's going to be important is that this mayor was in a very tough position, Dennis. When you have a criminal, and I want to emphasize criminal investigation going on where the federal government and the city is investigating people who are alleged involved in this guilty plea from Mr. Mitchell, you cannot go out right away and just give over these documents to the press because they are exempt for that. And then also people who are
There's been some debate about that among legal scholars.
Right, but I want to clear this up. It's a criminal investigation. So if there are wrongdoers that are mentioned in these documents, then it would totally expose them, which is something I think the mayor is not against doing. And then also what has taken some time is that they are redacting names and pertinent information that will violate people's privacy from these documents. So listen, I think come next week, once the mayor lays out this information, exposes it to the public, and cooperates with the federal investigation, this is something I think that he will hope that he will move past and continue to be a leader in the city.
You know, I do a little bit of crisis communications work in my line of business.
And you get paid very well for it.
And this is a crisis like none other. These are eye-popping numbers. And what Theron has described is a good communication strategy, trying to get out in front of it, showing that you're cooperative, that while there may be a stench in the state of Denmark, it's not necessarily going to be personal to the mayor himself. That's what he needs to do, is inoculate himself from these illegal activities. I rarely see numbers as big as what we're talking about in this case. I mean, this is $1 million. We've seen for the last 20, 30 years, public officials going to prison, federal prison, over $2,000, $3,000. This is really serious. I mean, somebody's getting a huge stack of cash, and if these people are telling the truth about the numbers involved. So this is what's important looking forward, though. The mayor is handling the crisis communications pretty well, but even with that, this is such a big deal that it threatens to overshadow the entirety of his last year in office. Everything could fall under this umbrella for the next 11 months.
I totally disagree. And let me tell you this. I mean, what you've seen from just former mayors like Sam Massel, who was quoted in a paper saying that this mayor and this city hall and this administration has been an administration full of integrity. When you see the amount of business leaders and how he had talked about what he's doing around affordable housing, how this mayor has really approached peaceful protests in this city to make sure that people don't create the riots and the chaos that we've seen in other cities. This one incident, which I do believe that the mayor will be able to get past, is not going to have a dark cloud over his administration. I think that he's handled it as best as he could. Yes, he's taking some hits, but ultimately he's got to do exactly what you just said, Brian. He's got to come out. He's got to talk about it, and he's going to release all the documents and take questions. I think that's probably one thing. Not only is he just going to release them, I think he's going to be able to answer all questions from reporters and the public.
That should be an interesting press conference.
It will. And he won't attack the press and call them fake news. I think he'll answer their questions like our
president. Oh, come on. Kasim was doing that well before Trump ever even thought of it. Come on. And I love him for it. Yeah.
But does Brian have a point, Theron, in saying that it'll be a subject of attention throughout the last year in office because there's a campaign to succeed him? And at least one candidate, Vincent Fort, has already made a point of it in a forum that I moderated for the Buckhead Coalition, Sam Massel's organization. Fort said, look, there are people on this platform with me, many of whom are current or former city officials, who either knew or should have known that this was going on. And that's a theme that's going to be sounded throughout the campaign, I'm sure.
Well, Senator Fort is running for mayor, Dennis. And so when you're running for mayor and you're trying to increase your name recognition and you want people to think a certain way about you and you want to carve out sort of a narrative for yourself, the one thing that a person who wants to position himself as an outsider is to attack current city government. I think the thing that I disagree with Senator Fort is this, is that he needs to understand that these are ongoing investigations that not just only happens in the city of Atlanta. let's not forget, DeKalb has had ongoing investigations. Counties where Brian do a lot of work, like Gwinnett and Cobb County, has had these investigations and stuff. So I think that the senator needs to be fair. I think he needs to understand that these are things that the city is doing their best to cooperate with. But I don't think it's an issue that he's going to be able to run against a very popular mayor and be successful this November.
Look, the last year of any two-term administration is full of hunting trips and golfing and junkets and time at the beach and hanging out with your family, because you're not going to get anything done. That's just the way it works. And that's not a slam on Kasim Reed or a governor or a president. That's just kind of how it is. And it is because of this, the second-term danger of scandal. It is as old as the two-term system, and it's just how it is. He's not going to get much done in these last few months, and this is going to be one more reason why.
Brian, having worked with a governor's office, when we see what Theron referred to as these kinds of episodes happening not just in one place but in many local governments and quite recently— does that end up landing in the state legislature or the state or in the governor's office as something where we say, you know, we need some bigger oversight here over what goes on in a lot of local governments where people in both parties are running things?
You know, I don't know how you have the infrastructure in place without just causing gigantic cost and a bureaucracy that just simply slows everything down. At the end of the day, taking a bribe for official action is against the law. It is a state crime. It is a federal crime. And the defenses we have in place are there are whistleblowers out there. There are people in every community in this state who are willing to do the right thing. And this case shows it. At some juncture, someone came forward or someone caught the wrongdoing going on with these bribes. We have to trust in that system. I'm for any system of transparency that cuts down on corruption. I think any American would be. I just don't want to create a scenario where there are unintended consequences that are just a bigger headache than anything else, that are for show but don't really make our governments more ethical.
Well, I think the thing here is this, listen, and Brian knows this. He's worked for a governor and members of Congress. I've worked for a mayor and members of Congress as well. Those individuals, he or she, cannot necessarily control all that goes on in the agency or the government entity that they are actually representing.
Absolutely. I agree.
So the one thing I want to do here, Dennis, is that I want to just change this narrative that when we say Mayor Reed, we're only referring to him not because he's been accused of anything, not because he's been alleged of actually taking these bribes that Brian is talking about, but just because he's the leader of the city. And he's a grown man and he can defend himself on that. But I think that when we get into this whole talk about this era of corruption, and this is something that Republicans have been doing a very long time in Atlanta, particularly folks who want to take over the city of Atlanta. And let's not sugarcoat this, because, Brian, this is where we have honest conversations. This also promotes this whole, it's African-American leadership in this city, right, on these counties, because these people are unethical. We've got to stop that. You know, this mayor and others have been as transparent as they can. He's not happy about this. This is something I know that he really wished wasn't going on. But let's not get too far to create this narrative of all black leadership in the city of Atlanta is corrupt. And then that this mayor, who, by the way, hasn't been accused or alleged or have been proving anything, that he's also involved in this corruption as well. I just think that that's one of the things that we've got to push back hard on.
One final thought, and it's a lot of fun this weekend, but there's certainly an economic component to the Super Bowl. There always is. Predictions, first of all, and then should the Falcons win? Well, even if they don't, I mean, what a boost for Arthur Blank, the Falcons, the whole stadium that they're moving to going into next year. But then does that mean that expectations are raised too?
I'm so proud of the Falcons. I mean, I've been a lifelong Falcons fan. You know, it's been some tough years. It's been years where the fans are really to be congratulated for sticking with these guys. You know, listen, with Arthur Blank and Rich McKay and the team and the leadership of Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and the defense with Jones and others, it's been really remarkable. I think we will win, Dennis. And I think that what we're going to see is a city that's very united. And going forward to 2019, when we will host our own Super Bowl, I think you're going to see that this idea, this thing that Mayor Reed and Arthur Blank and others, well, not as so much help as we wanted from the state, what they went to the public and got passed, it's actually going to be a great thing for the city.
What time is it? Oh, it's time to rise up. And You know, of all of the things that separate us in this city, one thing that unites us is this team this year. We are so behind them. I do think that we need to get behind, quit thinking like this, like, well, even if we don't win, it's going to be a lot of momentum. We can't think like that. We have been beat down. We have had our hearts ripped out of our chest cavities year after year after year. We had the Braves win the division for more than a decade and only come out with one World Series. That is our only championship we've had in this city. We are a major world destination, and we are a sports championship-deprived people. This is our moment. We must come home with that big Lombardi trophy. This is our moment. You know, our symbol of the city is the Phoenix rising out of the ashes. That's what this football team has done, is a Falcon rising up out of the ashes, but out of a desperately bad history. We can change our trajectory this Sunday.
Does it raise expectations, though? And I don't just mean from a sporting point of view, but does it raise expectations for what the city will be doing come the Super Bowl of 2019?
We need higher expectations. Our expectations up to this juncture have been of losing. We always expect to blow it in the end, just like we did against San Francisco in the NFC Championship 4 years ago. We have terrible expectations. It's time to change that.
I totally agree. Listen, I think that we're going to win, and we're going to have this parade on Tuesday or Wednesday, wherever it's going to happen after the Super Bowl. And I think
that's great. I'm making confetti at home right now.
Yeah. I mean, so I think to Brian.
Too bad they don't have ticker tape anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is the thing. Let's be fair, guys. I mean, what I heard from a lot of my fellow Falcons fans is that I don't want to get too riled up about these guys, right, because they've constantly shown that they can disappoint us. This is an awesome team. This is an awesome team with awesome players and awesome staff. And just really the fans are just really fired up. And so I think that this is going to continue to cement Atlanta as this international city, one of six cities that have actually hosted the Olympics. But if we can win a Super Bowl in 2017 and then host it in 2019, Dennis, I think the city will be on fire.
And not like with Sherman. This will be a different.
Yeah, this will be a different fire.
Be a different
but,
kind.
But that's a millennial term, Brian. You know, when we say on fire, it doesn't necessarily literally mean fire. It's just kind of like, you know, we kind of like, you know, really doing good things and excited, you know, moving around.
Good to know. I only speak Gen X.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And one of you made the point a little while ago about uniting the city. It's perhaps appropriate that the first team that will actually play its regular season games in the new stadium will be Atlanta United, the soccer team.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director to President Obama's 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist. He is a former Deputy Chief of Staff to Republican Governor Nathan Deal and Communications Director there, too.
Rise up.
Rise up.